You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and as the announcer said, you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m., this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, my co-host, Dr. Melody Fox, is unable to be with us today. I look forward to her return next week, and in the meantime, this show will continue to address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. We will introduce you to specialized schools, programs, and new innovations that can help you and your family find greater peace and joy together. Now, with over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in these areas of expertise who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, our guest today, Ed Bacon, is the rector at All Saints Church in Pasadena, California, a 4,000-member multi-ethnic urban Episcopal parish with a reputation for energetic worship and an inclusive spirit. He is a passionate advocate for peace and justice in the community, the nation, and the world. He has received several honors for his peace and interfaith work. Ed has been a guest and regular guest host on Oprah's Soul series on XM's Oprah and Friends Radio, as well as a guest on the Oprah Winfrey television show. Ed, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thanks, Alan. It's great to be with you this morning.
Well, I've had a chance to read your book, The 8 Habits of Love, and one of the first things that I recognized was I really felt a synergy with you in regards to how you got to where it is that you're at. And I really like the fact that you're focusing on things that we all should really be looking at. So I guess to start off with, I mean, share with our listeners what the 8 habits of love are as you see them.
Yeah, these are practices that you can actually turn into habits to make sure that fear is not driving your life. And they are generosity, stillness, truth, candor, play, forgiveness, compassion, and community.
Okay, well, now let's kind of go through them one at a time, starting with the habit of generosity.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about, you know, that part of it. I mean, I think we all know that we should be generous, but how this affects our overall approach to love.
Indeed. Generosity is about a very deep way in which we relate to one another. And it has to do and raises the question of whether or not in our encounters and transactions with one another, we are going to actually be a blessing to someone else. And that, by that I mean whether or not we are going to be an instrument of kindness in that person's world. I happen to believe that the world, the universe, is kind. In its deepest form and essence, the universe is kind. And when we tap into that kindness and become an instrument of that kindness in the life of another person, sometimes it's just a matter of touching someone on the back and giving them an attaboy. Sometimes it's saying, you know, you really can do this. Sometimes it's, you are an amazing person. Whenever you do that, then that person feels biochemically changed. There is a change that goes on in one's body, mind, and spirit when another person blesses you. And I tell the story in that chapter of when my father gave me a very important blessing. He was just weeks away from dying, and I needed his blessing about a change in course that I was making in my own vocational and professional life, which was very different from something that he would have chosen for me. And I was coached by a rabbi, actually, to call my father and ask for this blessing, and I did. And my father summoned up the life energy that it took for him to say, "Son, go for it." That was the most potent blessing I ever received. That's what I mean by the habit of generosity. It's allowing the blessings of the world and of the divine to flow through you into somebody else's life, rather than you're just receiving the blessings and holding on to them and not sharing them with somebody else. That's what generosity is about.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things that I enjoyed as I was reading it, was the fact that, you know, that this is something that everybody can do. Everybody can give. I mean, there are some people that will think that, you know, well, generosity means that I made a donation to three charities this year. And I love the fact that I mean, you really, you know, you got away from that everybody can do this. As you said, it can be, you can touch them in the right way. You can tell them something positive. You can be generous with your time. This isn't just a monetary thing.
Precisely. It can include monetary aspects, for sure.
Absolutely.
But I'm talking about a spirit. I'm talking about a spirituality of affluence. Affluence comes from the Latin word effluere, which means the flow. And it really has to do with whether or not your spirit is a spirit that allows the blessings, the graces, the kindnesses of the world and of the universe to flow through you.
Exactly. The things that some of us have had, or have really been blessed with that knowledge or with very fine, thoughts that are incredibly positive, and to be able to pass those blessings on, I think, are just so important. So that really drew me right into the book.
It's really important for you. I mean, what little I know about you, Alan, it's so impressive. And for you to give your life to helping others the way you do through this radio show and all the other things that you do, I mean, that is a blessing in and of itself. So I want to thank you for living your life the way you live your life. And I want all the listeners who are with us to feel blessed in what they do for other people. It's just tremendous when all of us live our lives to bless somebody else, to be generous with somebody else.
Well, I thank you for that, and I can also add that I know that we have an incredible amount of listeners that do that because of the questions that we get, because of the feedback. I know that we have many teachers. I know that we have many psychologists, many therapists, many educational consultants, I mean, that are out there doing things to help the next generation. So, yeah, I think that's a blessing as well, is that we have so many people that listen to this show that are doing the same thing.
Yeah, which generation comes from the word, say, root word that generosity comes from. It's about passing something on to the next level, to the next generation.
I didn't know that. I appreciate it. Now let's go into the next habit, which is one that I didn't expect, but I recognize it, and that is the habit of stillness.
Yeah. Yeah, every human being gets replenished when he or she can find a way to be still. And for some people, it's painting. Some people, it's staring into space. For me, it's about meditating for an hour in the dark every morning before I go into the world. But it behooves each of us to find some way where we can come to stillness, and we can, in that process, synchronize our breathing with the breathing of God, with the breathing of goodness, with the breathing of the divine and the sacred and of the universe. It is also a time in which we can actually do some analysis of ourselves to see how much of our life is given over to fear and how much of our life is given over to love. And I can't imagine going into the world without having that moment of stillness in my prayer chair every morning before I go out into the world.
Well, and once again, I couldn't agree more. I know for me, it's that time of gratitude. I wake up each morning and I wish I could say that I took an hour, but I don't. I probably take 15, 20 minutes, but I focus on the gratitude, all of the things that I'm truly grateful for, that I have in this world, which is, you know, the love of my family, or, you know, whatever it may be at that moment that I'm focused on. But I think that's one of the things, and I've tried to pass that on to my own children, that if you can approach each day that way, you're starting in such a positive mindset that I think it makes everything else that we do for the rest of that day just that much more beautiful.
I couldn't agree more. And it's also important for all of us to know, for every human being to know, that when we get stressed, when we find ourselves losing perspective on our lives, that we can just simply stop and take an extra 2 or 3 really deep cleansing breaths, and that can bring us back to perspective. And each person, I think, has a much richer life when they can find their own way to have their own time. 15 minutes is very precious. That's a wonderful thing to do that. But also to be able to do it throughout the day.
Yes. Oh, I couldn't agree more. Now let's talk a little bit about the habit of truth.
Yeah. So. Well, truth for me is so important, and this is where life gets transformed. If we think that truth is something that we can possess and then use to divide the world between the people who agree with us and people who don't, that is not what I'm talking about in terms of truth. Truth, rather, is something that stays always ahead of us, is always calling us to be more expansive in life, to have a philosophy of life that calls for the goodness and the improvement and the flourishing of every human being. Truth, in many ways, is old errors burned up. I was raised in the rural South in Georgia, and I was given certain narratives about the way the world works, and that African American people, for instance, were inferior to white people. And that was given to me as a truth, as an absolute, undeniable, infallible truth. And as I grew up and had friends who were across the racial boundaries and discovered that we are all equal, that we are intrinsically good, and that when everyone is given dignity, then that is the soil and light in which we can flourish. That old truth got burned up, and I was introduced into a more expansive way to live. I have a good friend who's read this book, and she has actually, she began to feel that her own church was telling her things about a certain category of people. It had to be, had to do with gay and lesbian people, that they were inferior. And she was reading this particular chapter one afternoon in her hammock after having had that experience. And she knew that she had to have a more expansive life. And so she left that church and went to a church that was more inclusive. Now, that's pretty radical. My life has some radical stories like that too, about where I had to leave places and relationships that were telling me that life was much more restrictive and, I think, suffocating than it actually has to be. But as soon as I began the process of following truth rather than trying to possess truth, those are two very different ways of living, then my life became much more free.
Well, and I think that's a great way to put it. And when you first started with what you said about, you know, not looking at truth as something that is that we're seeing that's being divisive, I mean, it was almost as if I thought that you were reading my mind, because I was reading your book while we were going through this last election.
Wow.
And as I'm reading the book, and I kept saying, you know, I would go to the gym and I would sit there and I'd be reading the book, and then I'd be watching the two television monitors that are up ahead of me that have two different news stations on that have two completely different twists on things. And I would look at it and I would go, how can anybody, you know, really understand what's going on when I'm looking at two things and each one of them is giving their truth? And people are agreeing with one and demonizing the other. And I thought, you know, this is so. I thought it was great that I was reading this chapter on truth at the time in which I was seeing a lot of things, which was pretty obvious that it couldn't all be truth.
Right.
So, But I really I agree with you so much that the truth is really what it is that we can find out, determine, and know for a fact for us, and then move forward with it rather than just buying into something that other people are trying to promote their own cause or their own agenda.
Well, Alan, you just said something very important in terms of truth for us. I mean, a huge part of this chapter is finding truth that has your name on it. Mm-hmm. And that is, if you do that, if you have a starting place there, I said, you know, this truth doesn't have my name on it. It has the name of my parents, say, or somebody who wants me to be who they want me to be rather than who God made me to be. Once you start on that journey, then you're in business, because you can always be asking yourself, now, does this have my name on it? And that is one of the most important questions any of us can ever, ever, ever ask. Is this for me? Because it's not for absolutely everyone. Sometimes we have to be very differentiated in embracing truth.
And if I could add to that, I would think that we can look at it and say, is this for me? But I think we should also be looking at it and saying, is this for everybody? Because,
yes.
Because I
yes.
think, yeah, there are so many people out there that will stand on something, and you realize that it's actually a very selfish stance. You know, well, it may work for you right now, but it really doesn't work for everybody.
That is so important, Alan, because ultimately, truth needs to serve the common good. Needs to serve everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad you emphasized that.
Well, thank you. Now let's go into the habit of candor.
Yeah, candor is one of the greatest compliments you can pay to your relationship. Candor takes place when it invites us to practice it when there happens in a relationship a time where you need to say something that might not be comfortable to say. People who have an intimate relationship, parents and children, partners, husbands and wives, this is a challenge to make the relationship more durable. And each one of the chapters begins with a poem, and the poem that begins this chapter talks about the bead of sweat that develops on my cheek, the sweat that pearls on my cheek when I tell you the truth. It's a really challenging thing to go into a relationship and make it more durable by saying, I need to say that this happened when you said this or you said that. Or I need to say this knowing that it may take our relationship outside of our comfort zone, but I really need to say it as a compliment to the relationship. And when people in relationships with one another begin to be candid with one another, there is a much more fruitful, enjoyable, solid, established relationship that is the result of practicing candor.
No, I completely agree. And first of all, I thought that it was the perfect follow-up to the habit of truth was to go right into the habit of candor.
Yeah.
And the message that I got from it was, I care about you enough to do this. I care
yeah.
about you enough to say this, as opposed to if I didn't care enough, it wouldn't be that important for me to open myself up to you like this. That's what I got out of that chapter.
That is so important. I'm just making a note about that. That really is where the compliment part comes in. I care enough about you, and I care enough about our relationship. Our relationship is this important. A friend of mine said that it's really better to think about confrontation not as confrontation, but as carefrontation. And you're giving an example of that. I care enough about our relationship to say this to you.
Yeah. Now, as I'm looking at the next one, I think this is the one that I feel like, at least in my case, and I think for a lot of other people, we're not doing enough of, and that is the habit of play. I feel like we've gotten, and especially as we've had a problem with our economy and such, we're not really spending the time that we need playing, being playful, and just playing and enjoying all of the gifts that have been given to us.
Oh, you're so right. I went Friday to see the new movie Lincoln, and I was amazed at how frequently he would tell a funny story in a moment of real tension. And that's what a lot of the stories are about in this chapter on the habit of play. People finding out that they're too tense, such that they have lost their perspective in life, and they have to do something to regain their sense of self. And to introduce humor or play or playfulness is just the thing to change a really negative force field so that I begin to see you, me, and the situation we're in from a different perspective. It's like bringing light and music into a very tense situation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, I want to share with everybody, the book we're talking about is The 8 Habits of Love. And if you want to check it out, if you want to go online, you can open up another screen on your computer and go to www.8habitsoflove.com. We are speaking with Ed Bacon, and we are going to take a break. We will be right back.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
All right, we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Ed Bacon, and we are talking about the 8 Habits of Love. I don't think we have the time to go through absolutely all of them. So what I'd like to do at this point, again, is I've given you the website. You can go. You can check out a little bit about the book yourself. But I want to talk a little bit more to Ed about, everything seemed to be, as I was reading it, it either referred to love or fear. So tell us a little bit about, as you were writing this, why were you so concerned, and how was everything drawn into love or fear?
Alan, I've discovered that we live in a culture of fear. In fact, there are people who make money if you and I and the American culture are fear-based. Now, fear is a gift from God. It comes into our lives to tell us whether or not we should fight or flee. However, that is a momentary visit. If we let fear set up housekeeping in our lives, or to use a different image, if we allow fear to drive our lives or be in the driver's seat of our lives, then what has happened is we've given fear an unnatural place in our lives, and it literally keeps us from thinking. Brain science is a very important part of this book, because brain science teaches us that we have 3 levels of the brain, and that when fear hits us, when we are flush with fear, our brain starts to function at its downstairs level, which we have in common with reptiles, who cannot think, they cannot care for their young, they can't play. You can't turn a snake into a pet and have the kind of interaction that you can have with a dog or a cat. Now, when we reintroduce love into our brain and into our being, we begin to function at the upstairs level of our brain rather than the downstairs level of our brain. And that is where we can think, we can create, we can innovate, we can be compassionate, and we can create community, and we can play.
Okay.
So the interaction of love and fear are crucial all the way through, and thank you very much for introducing this part of the conversation.
Well, and now going from that, how do we get free or get shifted from being fear-based? Because it certainly seems like with what we get with, I mean, as far as with politics or with news or any, it's they're really shoving sort of a fear-based analogy on us. I mean, it's
exactly.
So,
well, what I intended in the book, and what I'm very happy to report from people who've read it, is that when you pair the habit of stillness, another way to think about that is the habit of being aware of what's going on in your life, or being aware of how much fear is present and how much love is present. When you pair that with another one of the habits, then you're in business for shaking fear out of your life and functioning more on a creative level, which I think is a love-based level. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
I got a call from an email from a reader the other day who said he'd been reading my book, and he had to make a very difficult telephone call. This man has to raise a lot of money for the nonprofit he leads. And so he had to make a call to someone who was very wealthy and who had given him a lot of difficulty, in fact had been kind of destructive in their relationship. He said prior to making the call, he practiced the habit of stillness. He came to a place of calm inside himself. And then he practiced the habit of forgiveness, which is holding the other person in the light and wanting that person to be whole and wanting that more than you want to hold on to the hurt that that person caused in your life. He said he practiced forgiveness. He practiced stillness, picked up the phone, made the call. It was the first time he had had a conversation with this person where there was no rancor, there was no negativity, and he was claiming his own responsibility for having entered into that telephone conversation out of being based in love rather than fear.
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. It's transformative. It is. I mean, this stuff has created miracles in my life, and I'm thrilled that people are reading the book and using it, and they're finding it to create miracles in their lives.
Well, now, do you find that there are foundational habits that are more important than one another, or does it depend on the person themselves?
Both are the case. It really is very important for people to just open it and go where they feel led. I have a parishioner who said, I started with forgiveness because my husband, who's now dead, had emotionally abused me during our entire marriage, and I knew I needed to start with forgiveness. So some people really gravitate to one chapter more than the other. However, your question was, are there foundational habits? And I would say that generosity and stillness are the foundational habits, because generosity gets you into the process of being an instrument of blessing and kindness to other people. And stillness gets you into the business of being aware of how much your life is based on fear versus love at any given moment.
And that was kind of the feeling that I got, again, while I was reading it, was stillness became the foundation for everything, because I felt I needed to go into the stillness
Yeah.
before I went into each each other habit. You know,
absolutely.
I go to the stillness first, become still, know that I don't have anything weighing on me right at that moment, and then the others seem to open up much easier.
Absolutely. That's been my practice as well.
So now, what led you to write the book? And because what I'm thinking is, were these things that you were already practicing prior to writing the book, or did you start writing the book and it opened up for you and sort of made more sense while you were writing it?
Well, again, the answer is both. I've been practicing these habits for all of my life, particularly my professional life. And I've always been very interested, Alan, in looking at the spiritual greats and the great leaders in history and in our country, and wondering what was their secret. Because most people don't talk about their own interior work that they do in order to be really fruitful leaders and mentors and thought leaders. So I've been a student of this for a long time. What makes really great people, flourishing people, work? And I've been preaching about these eight habits for a long time. Now, I didn't have them boiled down to eight actual habits until I got the contract for the book, or actually was writing the proposal for the book. And the way that happened was I was on Oprah Winfrey's show with two other spiritual leaders, and she introduced them before she introduced me. She introduced them as people who had this book, that book, that book, and they showed the covers of the books on the screen while she was introducing the guests. I mean, the guests. She came to me, and she said, "Why don't you have any books?" Well, immediately, you can imagine, I was bombarded with invitations by literary agents to come on board and to let them help me produce a book. I took 6 months to kind of think and feel about that. Did I want to write a book? Which agent should I go with? I finally chose the perfect agent for me. She said, "Okay, let's get to work, and I want you to write a paragraph about a book that you would like to write." And the first thing that came out of my typewriter or my computer at that point was to talk about love and fear. And then I began to think about how you get out of the grip of fear. And these eight practices or habits came to light. I kept massaging them, I kept testing them, I kept critiquing them, and I found out that they were actually the ones that I wanted to write about and the ones that I had been studying in the lives of the greats all along. So that's how it happened. And what's amazing to me now is what readers are doing with the book as they are using it in their own lives.
Well, and I could certainly see some schools using it in the schools as well, because I would love to see more young people read something like this.
Now, well, I'm glad you mentioned that. One of my favorite examples. In fact, I'm going to be on a radio show with her and her husband soon, later in this month. She teaches sociology in a university in Chicago. And she has been using this book in her class, teaching social workers how to do their work. Then another person wrote me and is using it with her staff at an addiction recovery clinic. Then couples are reading the book to one another and stopping and talking about it on trips. Someone today told me about their plans to have it at the Thanksgiving family table so that somebody would read a portion of the book and then everyone could talk about what they're thankful for in light of one of the eight habits of love. What? So I'm really, really thrilled. Oh, another person, let me tell you this, Alan. Another person, we've got 8 weeks until the new year, and she is contemplating, reading and contemplating each of the eight habits during each of the weeks leading up to the new year. And out of that, she's planning to develop her resolutions, her New Year's resolutions, based on these 8 weeks of preparation.
Well, I think one of the people you just mentioned must have been either reading my mind or looking over my shoulder, because I also plan to do that at Thanksgiving. In the past,
wow.
In the past, we have gone through, and everybody has brought something to the table about what they're thankful for. And no matter what age the person is, they would bring something. You know, it would just be, just tell us something that you're most thankful for. And as I was reading this book, again, over the last couple of weeks, and I said, okay, that's what I want to do for Thanksgiving. That will be it. So yes, I'm right on the same page. And going along the lines, you just mentioned about the Oprah's Soul series. We have an email that has come in from one of our listeners, and they have a question for you. It says, I have listened and enjoyed several of your guest host appearances on Oprah's Soul series. One I especially enjoyed was Spiritual Convergence. I was very much impressed with your comments about the energy field when people gather together. And when you said that Christness did not mean that Christ was the only way to God. Could you tell us what you mean by this and how the Eight Habits of Love relates to that very powerful message?
Mm. Well, thank you to the person who just sent that in. I've got chill bumps here remembering that, and also taking in what you just said. Yeah, I believe this business of Christness is one way, one image to describe the tapping into the accessing of the sacred energy that is in every human being. I believe that at the core of every human being is a place that is sacred, that cannot be abused, where sin cannot come, where evil cannot touch. And it is the sacred. It is the beloved inside each one of us. And when we relate to another person's belovedness or sacredness from that place inside us, then miracles literally take place. Transformation takes place. Healing takes place. Hope comes into somebody's life. And when more and more of us do this, when more and more of us commit to living on that level of awareness and interaction and relationship, we can literally put an end to war. We can literally put an end to injustice and exclusion and prejudice, poverty, because we respect the dignity of every human being, and we see the sacredness in every human being. And that's one of the things that I mean about convergence, is that when the sacred energy in every one of us comes together to form this convergent community, we can literally transform the world. So, to answer the other part of the question, when we practice these habits, the subversive core in each one of those habits is this reality that every human being is a good person in their center. And when the goodness in us relates to the goodness in someone else, then we can literally transform the world. It is an amazing power, I think, that I'm not inventing it by any means. I'm simply describing it and how it's acted in my life and the life of those people I know.
Well, and once again, I could not agree more. And I was looking at it thinking that if you are practicing these eight habits of love, then I think, you know, you're focusing on something that's so positive, rather than focusing on what we get now in some religions, which is this thing of trying to focus on the fact that because I am with this religion, I am somehow more significant to a higher power. You know, let's get away from that stuff and let's focus on, as you're saying, the things that are more inclusive rather than divisive.
Precisely. And even, I mean, there are a lot of people who've hijacked Christianity to turn it into an exclusivistic club. But that's not what Christianity is about. I'm just talking about now my own religion that I practice. The texts inside the Christian gospel talk about this light that is in every human being. The fact that we are created by the Word, and the Word is inside us as well as the Word became flesh. You're so right, Alan. My experience is that when practitioners of any given religion go to the universal implication of their religion, then they are more aligned with the founder of that religion than otherwise. But to the degree anybody begins to interpret any religion as non-compassionate and as exclusive and as bigoted and prejudiced, then they've gotten away from the intent of the founder of the religion. That, what I've just said, holds up in an analysis, a theological analysis of every world religion.
Very well spoken. And actually, I mean, as you were saying that, I was finding a little place of stillness myself. So thank you for that. We have another question that's coming over, another email question, and this one says, I am an art teacher in a Christian school. Wow. Last year, one of our teens started a process of what she termed, and it's in quotes, forgiveness transformation. It says it was lighting a match. Before we knew what happened, more than half the class was involved. They would take a picture of someone they were having problems with, be it parents, friends, or siblings, and focus on it and say, either I love you, I'm sorry, forgive me, or thank you. And if what they claimed happened is actually true, it was amazing. I mean, what, and this is this person speaking, it says, you know, what I can say is that the kids themselves had a remarkable change, transforming to a much more considerate and compassionate young people.
That is one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard.
Me too.
it reminds me that I quote a wonderful writer about forgiveness named Connie Domino in my book, and I give reference to her website and her book in the back of my book. When I first heard about this business of you're not having to go to a person to forgive them, all you have to do is bring them to mind and hold them in a blessing or a prayer or a light of wanting them to be made whole, that liberates you from drinking the toxin of unforgiveness. You know, the opposite of forgiveness, let's call it unforgiveness right now, or grudge holding. That's like drinking a poison expecting the other person to get sick. Mm-hmm. You're the only one who's getting sick from it. And so the opposite of that is to hold them in the light or of love and want them to be made whole. So this happened just before Christmas one year, and I distributed to, I think we had 3,000 people in the two or three services we had that year, and asked them to bring to mind. I just gave them a time of silence in the middle of my sermon, asking them to bring to mind someone who had hurt them and whom they needed to forgive. Well, I got an email the next week from a man, and he had closed his eyes. I had asked everybody to close their eyes and have a moment of stillness. And here's a man in his 50s, and the very first person that came into his mind was his third grade teacher, who had taken a piece of his artwork and made fun of it in front of the rest of the class. Mm. And he had been holding on to that for all those years. And when he forgave that person, he said his life was changed. So, I mean, just think about classes and faith communities and worship services full of people who are being led to forgive. I mean, that will change the world right there.
Oh, you got that right. And that person that he forgave, that person may not even be alive anymore.
Exactly.
But yet, they, as you said, they needed to do it for themselves.
Exactly. Oh. And that's the point of forgiveness, is self-emancipation.
Well, while we're talking about forgiveness, let's give everybody a little bit more on that. So tell us a little bit more about the habit of forgiveness. Now, this is something you discuss in Chapter 6.
Right. So forgiveness is an energy, just like all the other habits are. And when you forgive, what you're doing is you're releasing a transformative healing energy into the world. Most importantly, you're releasing it into your own body and mind and spirit system. And the power of my knowing what I know about this actually comes from an experience that I had in my life in which I hated someone so much that I could have killed this person. And I realized that this was eating me alive. I was no longer available to my family. I was no longer available to my work. I had allowed myself to be consumed with this hatred. And I simply was walking down the street one time, saw this person drive by. This person didn't see me. And all of a sudden, I remembered how consumed I was with this. And I said, I need to forgive this person. I want to forgive this person. And then, Alan, in the very next moment, I was freed of all the resentment and grudge holding and hatred I had. Forgiveness was happening inside me. It was an energy that was washing my heart, my soul, my mind, and my body of its resentments and its poison. And so I knew immediately that you don't have to go to somebody and get them to say, I'm sorry. All you have to do is realize that grudge holding and hatred is eating you alive. And then all you have to do is simply say, I want to forgive that person. And then the energy of God, the energy of the spirit, of the universe, whatever comes and takes you from there. Now, you can go through an affirmation, which I have in the book, of holding someone in the light and saying, I am releasing this event and I am releasing you. I want you to be made whole. And you can do that, and that is another way to get at it. But forgiveness is so crucial in our lives. It makes us younger. It makes us more whole. It makes us healthier.
Exactly. And I think to add to that, too, not just forgiving somebody else, but forgiving yourself.
Oh, absolutely. I deal with that in 8 Habits of Love. Forgiving yourself is huge. It is so important because sometimes that's the threshold that you need to cross. And I do, before we leave forgiveness, I do want to say that I do a lot of premarital counseling, people I'm going to marry, I'm going to officiate at their weddings, and I draw a family map of 3 and sometimes 4 generations just kind of to get at the dynamics that they're bringing to their new relationship and to their new family. And I discover that sometimes grudge holding and resentment is a family process. It is a family commitment that you're going to hold on to grudges. And so for an individual to change that sometimes is a monumental Herculean task, to go against the entire family tradition and convention. So oftentimes it's important to kind of look at whether or not I'm going against the tide of my family to forgive.
As you were saying that, the vision I got was of the Hatfields and the McCoys.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now we are just about out of time, and it's just flown by. And the first thing I want to say is I do hope that we can have you back on, because this has just been incredible. But one more. Okay. How can people learn more about these habits?
Great. Well, I clearly would love for people to buy the book and read it. And before you do that, if you want, even today, right the second, to learn more about the habits, you can go to my website, 8habitsoflove.com, and 8 is with the number 8. And I have blog posts there. There's also the first chapter, Generosity, which you can read for free and download. You can follow me on Twitter. I put 2 or 3, 4 tweets on the Twitter feed every day. And then there is a way from my website to go to the sermons that I preach, and it's almost never that I preach a sermon that I don't mention love and fear, living in the house of love versus the house of fear. So, and then you can also go to my church's website, All Saints Church, Pasadena, California, and you can go there to all the sermons that I preach. And we actually have a YouTube channel now called All Saints Church, Pasadena, California, where you can download not only, and view not only my sermons, but the sermons of my colleagues.
Well, Ed, we have absolutely loved having you on here. So, again, thank you so much for coming on. For everybody out there, I look forward to you being with us again next week on Answers for the Family. Have a great week.
Thanks, Alan.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.